I think we're good to go when you are, Dr. Mittman.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Keith.
Dr. Mittman, how are you?
Good morning.
I'm good. Nice to see you, Keith. Okay. It is 10 o'clock on the button. The Board for Private Postsecondary, Arizona Board for Private Postsecondary Education is hereby, Finance Committee is hereby called to order on September 28th, 2023 at 10 a.m. Pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a Finance Committee meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found at ppse.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chair, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format by contacting the director, Kevin LaMountain, at 602-542-5716 or the TDD number at 800-367-8939. And with this being called to order, Mr. LaMountain, can you call the roll?
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace?
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present. Staff, Jacqueline Rome?
Present.
Present. Mr. Keith Blanchard?
Present.
Present. And I'm Kevin LaMount, Executive Director. I'm present.
Thank you. Moving on, I will move to accept the audio recording of the June 22nd, 2023 Finance Committee meeting as the official meeting minutes. Can I get a second?
Mr. Doug, I'll second that.
That was Mr. Wallace. Mr. LaMountain?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By the vote of three ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Great. First up, American Home Inspector Training Institute. Come on down.
Hello.
Who do we have here?
This is Jamie Illingworth. I am compliance analyst with American Home Inspectors Training.
Great.
And with,
go ahead.
Yes, I can give an introduction if y'all are ready.
Yeah, is there anybody else?
Yeah, so with me are Damon Nolan, our accounting manager, and Nicole Andler, director of compliance. And American Home Inspectors Training is a leader in the online home inspection field, offering online licensing and continuing education courses for inspectors around the nation since 1993. AHIT was acquired by the CE Shop LLC at the beginning of 2022, which is well known for its online licensing and continuing education offerings for multiple industries, including real estate, mortgage, and home inspection with AHIT. We are happy to answer any questions the board may have regarding our school renewal and the quarterly reports.
Great, well, thank you very much. Do any of my fellow board members care to ask any questions?
I do not.
Okay, it was Mr. Wallace. All right, I guess the only question that I had, Ms. Illingworth, is it looked like the, you know, we're talking about two related entities, the CE Shop, the parent company, and American Home Inspector Training here in Arizona. So for Arizona, how come you budgeted for significantly less in revenue for this fiscal year compared to the previous year? And I noticed, you know, that you're tracking, you know, I think about half of what you did last year.
So I can probably jump in and answer that. So as Jamie mentioned earlier, we acquired a hit back in 2022, like January of 2022. So as part of that, we were just being a little bit more cautious with some of the data. They'd gone through a handful of different acquisitions over the years. So with that, we were just being a bit more cautious in the, as we kind of really learned the business and kind of learned how to really model it out in a better sense. So that's really the reason why we had the decrease there.
Okay. Okay. And just out of curiosity, I always like to know, where are you guys?
I'm in Denver area.
Okay. I'm in Tucson, actually. We're all around the country. And Nicole's in Wisconsin.
Yes, Drury, yes. Wisconsin today.
So three time zones. Way to go.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my only question. Any other questions from board members? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the non-accredited vocational license and maintain the $33,762 surety bond and to continue quarterly reporting?
I'll second that.
Well, I didn't make it, so Scott, you are the well, you are the first.
Oh, I'm the first, okay.
Not only the first for this, but it's the first motion for a school for the entire day. And I'll second it.
I make the motion.
Okay, and I'll second it. Mr. LaMountain?
Great. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye by the vote of three ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next up. And I think these are, discussion possible action. Okay. Advanced business learning. Come on down.
Hi, this is Susan Morris, co-owner and senior vice president.
Hey, good morning. This is Tom Jenkins, president and co-owner.
Great. Do you guys like to make an opening statement?
Yeah, we would. We'd like to bring everybody sort of mentally as to where we are today versus where we were just before COVID. What we had done was establish the school based on a lot of business coming in from WIOA. We had good relationships with the Veterans Administration Vocational Rehab on Central Ave in Phoenix. They were supplying more students as well. And we also had very good relationships with the U.S. Army, with what's called Army Ignited, and students coming from there as well. So that was what was funding ABL up to and including COVID. We had toyed with the idea of expanding out into more public marketing to look for just general students in the public marketplace. We toyed with that on and off. We really didn't put our feet in that water too much because enough business was coming in with the three organizations I had mentioned, WIOA, Vocational Rehab, and then the U.S. Army. When COVID hit, everything, like a lot of schools, fell apart. We went 100% online, went into survival mode. We took on debt in order to keep the doors open and keep our instructors paid and keep staff paid. And we continued doing that until the COVID started to go away. And we jumped back into our regular norm of doing business and found that WIOA business has basically disappeared, whereas before we were getting four or five students a month, we were now getting one if we're lucky. VA Voc Rehab in Phoenix, again, we were getting three, four, up to five students a month before COVID. Now we're getting one if we're lucky. And Army Ignited, with their pool program, they have redesigned it. And whereas, again, we were getting three, four to five students a month, we're now getting one, maybe two a month if we're lucky. So things have really dried up significantly.
Closer to zero, Tom, on Army Ignited. The program.
All right, Army Ignited has now gone closer to zero. But that has caused us to really sit back and go, all right, we're sort of at the fork in the road. Either we close the business, walk away, and say, that's it, we're done, or We did a little research and we found that there are a number of digital marketing firms that specialize in supporting schools specifically. In our case, we found a marketing company that is very familiar with universities, colleges, and trade schools. They do a lot of work in Arizona and outside of Arizona. So we approached them, a bunch of others as well, and had a real serious conversation about if we keep doing this, can we turn the company around and redesign our marketing efforts and expand our marketing efforts to walk away, to include now public-facing marketing? And after talking to four or five different substantial marketing firms, we picked one. We made the investment in the relationship, and we are now redesigning the company, and we're looking at 6 months of redesign for our public-facing marketing efforts to bring students on from the public, and then 6 months of really refinancing, paying down debt, reorganizing, and cleaning up books. So we're looking at a year plan to reinvent, redesign, and reestablish ABL. Question?
I'm supposed to say, are there any questions?
Well, I heard somebody start talking. So I thought somebody was coming in.
No. Well, that's okay. That was a good prompt. Are there any questions for Mr. Jenkins and Ms. Morris? So I guess the first question that I have is, it looks like for this fiscal year, you've trimmed your losses, you know, about in half, right? You know, because you're negative $67,000 last year, you ended over $200,000 in the red. On the other hand, from a, you know, looking at your balance sheet, I'm just wondering, you know, what's your cash position? You know, it looks like, let's see, I could pull it up here. It looks like you're, you don't have a lot of cash. You've got about $3,000 in cash. What is it going to take, both from a burn rate standpoint for the rest of the year, but also for the investment that you're talking about with, from a marketing standpoint?
I think the new students that we plan on getting from our partnerships with the digital marketing company, first of all, they're not what WIOA. They will be self-pay and or financed, and the finance company pays us directly. We're also partnering with this is in our executive summary. We have a company that's in essence a collection agency, so we're not collecting for students who are behind on their student loan payments. So, you know,
let me jump in and just clarify a little bit here. Susan's absolutely right. We have two partners that we brought on board in addition to the digital marketing company. One is an organization that does 100% tuition funding, and they're a very typical and well-established national firm for tuition funding. And like Susan said, they pay us as soon as the student's approved, they pay us up front, clear money, we're done. They then take care of collecting the payments over time that the student owes, like any national tuition funding company. The other one we went with is for students who don't want to take out a typical loan and want to be able to put down some of their own money and then self-finance, self-pay after that. So that's another company we dealt with. And they will handle the collection of the deposit, and they will handle the collection of the monthly payments that are agreed upon over the agreed upon time. And they take out a small fee of like 3%, and then they pay us 100% of the balance coming in. So that's going to clean up our efforts as far as trimming our expenses to collect money. It also cleans up a bit our effort to have people on staff to do this kind of work. We no longer have to do that. So we are very much in the belt tightening mode.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and it sounds like you must have tightened your belts over the last year. Yep. Based on your income statement.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are there any, if there are no other questions from the board, I'd like to make a motion. I think I have to make a motion to, for Advanced Business Learning to be on quarterly reporting, which is good for you guys because that way you get to hang out with Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, myself, get to see us. And, you know, if there are things that we can do to be helpful, you know, we always like to give unsolicited advice.
Well, we like kumbaya group hugs, so that's fine by us.
Yeah. Well, I think that's between the two of you. okay. So I made a motion. Could I get a second, Mr. Ball or Mr. Wallace?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Mr. LaMountain?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye with a vote of 3 ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Great. All right.
Thank you all for working with us as you always do. Jacqueline has been amazing, and I just want to thank all of you for, again, continuing to believe in the future of ABL. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Dr. Mittman?
Yeah.
If I can, for just one moment, I do want to announce that we have a new attorney general. She's on the call right now, Janine Galvin. And although typically the AG doesn't sit in on the finance committee, she's here to kind of get an understanding of what's going on. So just an introduction to the board members to Janine, who's our new AG.
Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here. Look forward to working with Kevin, his staff, and all of you. I do have an associate attorney, Deborah Abbey, and she will be assisting as well. And she will appear this afternoon.
Great. Well, it's really nice to meet you. And I'm Paul Mittman. And I chair the committee and the board.
Very nice. Very nice to meet you.
And let me introduce you to, our other directors introduce themselves and say like what you do in your, when you're not, you know, working 24 hours a day for private post-secondary education.
Mr. Ball?
Yeah, my name's Doug Ball. I'm a CPA here in town. My wife and I have had a CPA practice here for about 25 years. I specialize in the audit of trade schools.
Very nice. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, this is Scott Wallace. I'm a founding partner at Wallace, Plush & Dreher, CPA firm in Scottsdale and Chandler, and now I'm a counsel to them. And I, been involved with this organization for probably 3 years now, I guess. I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but probably right around there.
And Mr. Wallace is also a forensic accountant. So if we have any, like, CSI cases or something like that, you know, we would call on him. And I'm president at Sonoran University of Health Sciences. And it's really, you know, nice to meet you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to working with all of you. And just a little bit of my experience, I did represent private post-secondary back in the day with Terry Stanfill. So I do have some familiarity with the organization. So look forward to working with
you. Great. All right. And you've met the staff, right? Or have you not?
I know Keith from back in the day. I've met Kevin, of course, but no other staff members.
You've already heard about Jacqueline Rome. Like
there we go.
The last school was raving about her. Kevin already said nice things. So really,
very nice.
You could really
nice
say we're saving the best for last. Jacqueline, you want to introduce yourself?
It's nice to meet you. I'm Jacqueline Rome. I've been with AZPPSE for a little over 2 years and very much enjoy it. But I look forward to working with you.
Same, Jacqueline. Nice to see you.
Thanks.
Okay. Janine, we don't use the word or phrase back in the day because it makes you feel really old.
Okay, Keith. Noted.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Blanchard, for reminding us that we're old. Okay. Next up, Inspection Go Academy. And we have with us, who do we have?
Yeah, I don't think I've met you before. My name's Asha Shara, and I'm the Chief Administrative Officer. And I also invited Will Russell, who's on with us, and he's really our acting CFO position, as well as one of the original shareholders. And then we also have Waylon, who's our Senior Manager of Academy, and Allison Macy, who's our Senior Director of Finance. And so I asked for Will to give a bit of an overview and an executive summary to you, if that's okay to proceed with now.
It's okay with you. It's okay with us. Go for it.
Great. Thank you.
Hello. And I know we've had a few from, like Asha said, she pulled me in. I'm a CPA as well, one of the founders of the company, and brought me in to help get a little bit more involved here, because I know we've had some rocky meetings from the finance perspective and information being provided. I just thought, to Asha's point, it may be good to just give an overview of the strategy of Inspection Go from a high level, from the parent company perspective, but then also the academy and how that fits in, because I think there's some missing pieces there that'll help understand our financial position better from that explanation. So, when we started Inspection Go, we were, really focused on a kind of a consulting community, to where we have really pretty much a very large majority of the largest home inspection companies in the country that belong to our community that we call, where, you can kind of think of it as even a elite BM, business consulting group, where, we're doing coaching, software, education, call centers, and really supporting the inspection industry with what they need to be successful, and really trying to elevate the industry. And as part of that, we like I said, the call center, we answer the phone and book appointments for call center for inspection companies. We consult on the business and have quarterly meetings with them. And we're also, the biggest part of our business is we're building a software to make the home inspection booking experience better, and help the home inspection industry. So with that, think of the ultimate scenario where someone calls in, needs a home inspection. Well, the realtor can go to an app which will match you with the best inspection company around, and you can just click a button and it'll automatically pull data from the MLS to book that home inspection. So we're spending a lot of money on investing in that software. So through learning over the few years of what home inspectors need, we found that there's a large portion of the industry that's retiring. They're having trouble to get new staff, just like a lot of different industries. So we started working on the school that can help us train inspection companies, but also it feeds demand for all the other portions of our business. And there's a huge need that we saw in the industry. So we started to, over the last few years, expand that into different states and develop the Inspection Academy that we can, again, help train inspectors and also backfill positions for companies that we already have, to provide the students with a job right away. So, the academy is a big part of what we do, but, and as you can see from the financials for the first 6 months of this year, we're positive about 19,000 when you allocate overhead. But when you look at Inspection Go as a whole, we have some major losses. Well, even though the financials look bad, we're actually having some major wins in the business. Here in June, we actually just finished out an investment with Wasatch Equity Partners, and they valued the business just under $40 million. So, because we're primarily in that tech piece of it, where the money's going, traditionally, as you look at financials, and I know it's like, how's a company worth money when they're losing it? But the product that we're building is also getting very close to where we'll start to monetize the product and actually start to generate revenue by utilizing the product, which is what
can I ask you a question just for a clarifying question, what? Will? I'm looking at your Inspection Go total financials, including Arizona and Parent, for the first 6 months of of 2023, right? And yep. I'm assuming that these are not in the thousands, right? And so it looks like from a cash standpoint, you know, you've gone from, I don't know, last year you started with $1.55 million. And then at the end of last year, it was down to $260,000. And now at that's this year. I'm looking all at this year. But anyway, your cash right now is at, as of June, was $29,462.
Yep.
Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, yes. And in what you're seeing there is, it's really the nature of our business, where our cash, based on when we have investment money coming in, it's going to be higher or lower when that investment hits, right? Because we are burning cash outside of the school into the software development, because at this point, we're no longer capitalizing the software costs because it's put into production. So, you know, those payroll costs are getting expensed. And we actually had, I think it was July 13th, we had the $1.5 million come in July as an investment from Wasatch as well. But Wasatch, and you can look up their, if you look up their website, but they're in that deal, we converted. And if you look at our balance sheet, the debt, we were around, getting over my screen here, eight. So if you look at year end, we had $8.4 million in convertible debt. And then the financials you're looking at, that was cut down to four. And what happened there was, in the transaction, actually in April, all of the current investors were converted into equity, and Wasatch put another investment in as like a Series A investment. So at this point, we cut that debt in half, and the only debt that's there is owed to Wasatch as a convertible debt. But they are now the main driver in committing to fund the business for as long as it takes to get the software to profitability. So like I said, I mean, it was actually a huge win for us financially to be able to pull that off this year. Okay. But
so what we're looking at, like, for example, on your balance sheet, it doesn't show the latest investment because that came in July.
Right.
And so like your current ratio, which was like 0.3, is significantly higher now.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? One time, a previous board chair did say, well, you're the accountant here, and I'm not. And so since we have two other accountants, I'm sort of like at the edge of my, my accounting knowledge. You know, and I guess, you know, just as a non-accountant, I do have concerns. We have seen other schools come in, who are, you know, because of either, you know, the quality of their product or, you know, what they're proposing, you know, they attract a lot of investors. And so I get, that can be a viable strategy, but I'll defer to, Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball for any other questions.
Yeah, this is Scott Wallace. When do you expect, this, software development to come online, or I guess be ready to go? And because I think are these losses created by the software development costs, amongst
yes.
other things?
Right. The majority of it, right? Yeah. So, where we're at right now is we're actually launching the software with the first inspection companies, to where they are using it. And we'll start to see incremental based on there's a couple different models, leads, and then also just the use of the software. So the advantage that we have is we have, you know, 100,000 transactions related with our network of home inspection companies that belong to us, right? So when you look at the transactions we have and you start to apply what we can get per transaction, it gets pretty exciting, because we don't have to go out and recruit to get leads. They're already using our other products. So we're just now starting that. And Allison, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're probably a year out from seeing profitability on the software in those costs. But what happens though then is it gets exciting because we're not those costs are done as far as developing the software. We're not further investing those costs, and we don't have to hire additional resources.
Okay. I'm looking at your April 2023 statement of cash flows. It says net earnings of $6.3 million. Is that really related to debt, or what's going on
there? Let me just make sure I'm looking in the right spot. I'm on it. 6 point. I'm sorry. Can you reference that number again? I just want to make sure I'm in the same.
$6.3 million and the statement of cash flows, that says net earnings or loss. It's in the column I as in Isaac, but it's April
30th, 2023. So that.
I think
there's an error in the sheet when you're looking at that. That's not accurate. And I didn't. Like I said, I was kind of pulled in here to make sure we can clean it up. But I think that's just there's something going on there because that's not right.
It can't be.
We didn't make $6.3 million in April.
Because your loss is running $300,000 or so every month, and and you're not capitalizing the software development costs. I understand why, but so that's just something to address. It would be helpful to us to get that fixed.
Yep. Yeah, okay. we can correct that. And it really, it's to your point though, that is that 350 or so right now as far as and we are obviously looking at areas always to cut costs, and we're actually working on some of that on the call center. But from the standpoint of where we stand right now, the revenue from the software, when it starts to kick in, we just don't want to cut ourselves too short yet because we're so close for that. So in the investors, like I said, they've committed another $2.5 million that is going to be more than sufficient to get to where we need to be. But so that's kind of where we're at right now with that. But
I can see where your source. I mean, if they put in as much money as you just indicated, in July, I mean that they're betting on this software development. And they know a lot more about it than we'll ever know. So, I mean, if that happened and that's related to that, that's encouraging. When do you think that software's? Did I ask this question? When do we think that'll be ready to go?
So we're currently starting to roll it out to some of the larger inspection companies we have, so they can use it and figure out any quirks or problems and really get it so it's ready to go for launch and generating revenue. So we're right on the cusp of it right now.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Well, we'll see you in 3 months, and hopefully you'll have some sales to report.
Yeah. If I make, I have one question for you guys, if that's okay. I know, so I want to make sure from a reporting standpoint requirement that we satisfy what you need. And there was an email I was forwarded from a few days ago that an independent review is needed. We were a unique company in that for our size and, you know, the amount of investment we've come on, we've never needed an audit or a review of any, because I've been involved to be able to make sure that, you know, who we're presenting the financials to know that they're accurate. So, right now we don't have an independent CPA do anything. But I understand that could be, you know, a requirement, the education piece. And obviously there's a major difference between an audit and a review. So, just wanted to pose that question so we can kind of start working on satisfying that requirement.
Mr. LeMountain, you want to take that?
Sure. I'm going to actually refer this over to Jacqueline, Ms. Rome.
Thank you. So according to our rules, it's not an audit that you necessarily need, but since the gross tuition revenue is over $350,000, it is a requirement for the company to have the financials prepared and compiled, reviewed, or audited by a CPA according to GAAP. So it has to be one of those three, and it can't just be you guys creating your financials anymore.
Right. So I heard compiled in that list as well, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, except for our board, you also need to have individual financials for the company, for the school that's being renewed. So you can compile them for the organization, but we do have to have individual campus financials because that's the way we know if the school itself is fiscally responsible.
And we could probably maybe have the firm add that as a supplemental schedule of their report. So you have the company and then that has the division.
Okay. As long as it has all three financial documents, so statement of cash flows, profit and loss statement, and the balance sheet.
Okay, got it. And footnote disclosures, I would assume that is that a. I know sometimes you can do a financial with an exception with no footnotes, but.
That I will refer to Kevin. So you mean footnotes on the bottom of your financial statements? If it's necessary, they need to be there, but.
Yeah, I'm referring to usually if you have a CPA prepared financial, you have several pages, like 5, 6, 7, you know, of those notes that follow it.
Yes.
We would want that.
Yep.
Okay. Got it.
Great. And Dr. Mittman and Mr. Russell, again, one of the challenges that we've had with this institution, which is why you're here, is that we don't really, there was some miscommunication, I think, prior. And I think we're really trying to get an understanding of what your financial position is. And as you can see, even throughout today, the conversation that we've had so far, it's still questionable about what you've provided us in the past and what you have today. And I think that is the concern that we have going forward. So, you know, I spoke with Ms. Sakari yesterday or the day before yesterday and expressed our concern and that we have someone like yourself, such as yourself, to represent the institution with the financial piece because we really, you know, I think we have always questioned what your gross tuition revenue is, your which then based on upon that triggers a whole bunch of different questions that we have regarding the institution in Arizona, along with the main corporation. So, one, thank you for being on, but please understand it's critical that you provide us accurate information on time or before on time, which is always the best. So that we have the opportunity to review it and provide the information back to our board.
Okay. Yeah, so we will get your in either of those three before the next board meeting. All right, audit, accountant review, and whatever the third one was. I didn't know that there was a third one.
Yeah, and is the next meeting in October, Asha? I just want to make sure I don't overcommit because
the next meeting that you would be appearing before is in December 7th. Okay,
right. So we'll work on that because yeah, it takes as you guys I'm sure are aware that need to get a firm engaged and start working on that right away. So I'm going to make sure I understood that. Thank you.
Good one. All right. Well, thank you very much. Inspection go. Go find an accounting firm. All right. Next up, Huntington University. And who have we representing the school? Don't all speak at once. All right, we're going to Zoom. See, Huntington University going once, going twice. And Ms. Lamountain, I think you're muted.
I am, but now I'm not. So, okay. Ms. Bonner, we can't hear you. I see you waving.
Connie, are you on? I thought I saw Connie on.
Yeah, Connie is on.
Okay. I apologize. I'm actually using my husband's computer. So that's why it says Oral Glazier.
Would you like to provide an opening then?
Or you could ask Earl to provide an opening since it's his
computer. Yes.
Yeah, you want to give us an opening?
Connie is the finance professional, so I'm going to let her talk.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. Now my camera won't work, but this is always the case with my system, so. Okay. I'm sorry, so you can't see me, but I am happy to be here today to talk to you and want to share with you that I have Tiffany Glazier, who you just met, and she is our new director of Arizona operations. You may remember Jeff Bergren, who is also with us today. He was our director of Arizona operations, and now he is the executive director of graduate and online programs. And we also have Dr. Jamie Sanfilippo with us, and she is our new dean in Arizona and will be overseeing all aspects of the campus. So I'm happy to have all of them here today.
Great. So are we, do you have you want to share like a financial update?
I do. Thank you. We have exciting enrollment news to share. Huntington University had the highest enrollment for our fall 2023 overall with 1,500 students. And included in that total were 241 undergraduate students in Arizona. Of that amount, 164 were degree seeking. And 77 are students represented high school dual entry. And this is a new program that Dr. Jamie Sanfilippo has spearheaded with 5 area high schools to encourage students to be exposed to Huntington in Arizona. The degree seeking of 164 is actually 10 more students than what we had in 2022 and is a record enrollment. So we're very pleased to share that with you. The growth in our programs has allowed us to add an additional faculty, full-time digital media arts faculty this year. So we now have four full-time faculty on staff in our undergraduate program. And then with regards to our graduate program, the latest news for us is that we have been approved by the Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education and by the Higher Learning Council for a new program that which is a bridge program called OTA, which is Occupational Therapy, to OTD bridge program. So basically occupational therapy assistant being able to move to the OTD bridge program. The program meets a market need for certified occupational therapy assistants and physical therapy assistants with associate's degrees to complete an entry-level OTD degree. The curriculum content will be taught via a hybrid model, providing students flexibility in attending classes. We have presented this program to the AZPPSE for approval, and we'll begin recruitment upon approval from them. And our current staffing level supports this new program. We're very excited about it, and we think that it will be a great assistant to us in filling our cohorts that we have for that program. So thank you.
Great. All right. Questions from the board? Did your audit get finalized? I saw that we had a preliminary audit.
Yes, it did. And I am sorry, we did not get those sent to you. But the numbers did not change from what you had seen. So
okay.
What we provided. But I will send those right away.
Okay. And it showed a loss for the year.
Yeah.
And so you guys will have the pleasure of spending, you know, a little bit of time with us every 3 months. But congratulations on enrollment. I know that that's always, that's always a good feeling, especially, you know, given the uncertainty in the higher education landscape. And so that's great. And congratulations on your HLC and your OT approvals as well. Questions from either Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball?
I don't have any.
Okay. Either do I. Mr. Ball, it's your last chance.
I have no questions.
You're going to leave.
Okay. I have no questions.
Okay. Maybe I'll stay. Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. And, best wishes for a good academic year. And look forward to seeing you in December.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Aspen University.
Hello, Dr. Mahan.
Very nice to meet you.
Good to see you again.
Yes, indeed.
We are going to make an opening statement. I do have some people with me that I'll introduce. Thank you again for inviting Aspen to come before you today. In connection with our quarterly financial report for our fiscal 24 Q1, joining me today is Aspen's VP of Finance, Michael LaMontagne. And he can provide a detailed update to the board regarding Aspen's Q1 financials. Also joining me today is Matt LaVey. He's the CFO for Aspen's parent company, AGI. The board may have questions relating to the parent company, and Matt is available to answer them. We are very proud of how far Aspen has come in the last year, and we've navigated the impacts of the teach out of our pre-licensure nursing program and seeking individual state authorizations. Aspen's posted another profitable quarter in fiscal year 24 Q1, and I'll provide a high-level overview here, and we'll leave it to Michael and Matt to provide any additional color. In our fiscal year ending April 30, 2023, Aspen University produced for the full year net income of $3.5 million and EBITDA of $6.6 million for an EBITDA margin of 16%. Our net income in this first quarter of fiscal 24 was $646,000, and EBITDA was $1.4 million for an EBITDA margin of 18%. This indicates that our profitability margin has actually expanded. Even though our enrollments and revenues in the first quarter were down 28% and 35% year over year, respectively, the profit margins are up because we've implemented two organizational restructurings, which we reported on before, and right-sized the university for the known reduction in revenues and enrollment, while also maintaining an appropriate level of student-facing support. In the recent AGI filing with the OTC, though it showed a net loss for the full year ending April 30, 2023, it also showed that AGI turned positive on an EBITDA basis in the third and fourth quarters of the 2023 fiscal year. And as you will hear, this is trending through our 24 Q1 and anticipated for fiscal 24 Q2. So the parent company, following the completion of our second fiscal quarter next month, that ends October 31st, anticipates it will have achieved EBITDA profitable results for an entire previous 12 months. Consequently, AGI's support of Aspen University's fiscal management plan continues to remain strong. Regarding the recent letter from DEAC sent to Mr. LaMountain expanding the show cause directive due to increased financial concerns about the university and its parent, Aspen believes that our current increased profit margins, right-sizing, and trending positive EBITDA indicate strong fiscal management and practices. Moreover, the university's composite score based on our two most recent GAGAS filings for 21 and 22 are both 2.9 out of a maximum of 3. And the parent company, AGI, also delivered passing composite scores in its two most recent fiscal years of 21 and 22. This additionally indicates that Aspen University and the parent company are financially stable. And now Michael and then Matt will discuss Q1 results for Aspen and AGI, respectively.
Thanks, Sherry. Good morning, everyone. Aspen University, yeah, we had a fantastic first quarter. Q1 FY24, we generated $7.7 million while producing a net income of $646,000, as Sherry mentioned, and an EBITDA of $1.4 million. The exciting part of this is a significant operational improvement over the previous first quarter's results, where we generated $11.9 million in revenue with a net loss of $209,000. Instructional costs in Q1 were at 32.8% of revenue, slightly down from the previous quarter of 34%. Gross margins in the first quarter was $5.2 million and 65% of revenue, compared to the prior year of $5.1 million and 42% of revenue. General and administrative costs were $3.5 million and 45% of revenue in the first quarter. The student population ended July 31st, the first quarter, 5,549, while we generated 430 new SART enrollments with minimal advertising spend. Exciting news for the second quarter, we're through 2 months now of the first quarter, and we're forecasting 817 new SART enrollments. Which includes the first 2 months of actuals and then 1 month still working towards. And the marketing again restarted here in the second quarter. Aspen University also has been successfully managing the HCM2 process. We've received our first three disbursements of approximately $1 million, $2.9 million, and $2 million respectively. Reimbursement timeframes for our file submissions to approval have decreased nicely to an acceptable 45 days or less. Aspen University continues to perform at a high level through consistent financial and operational reviews that have resulted in outcomes that I reported today. So thanks, you guys. Matt, I'll turn it over to you for comments on AGI.
You're muted, Matt.
Sorry about that. Hi, everybody. Nice to meet you. I'm the chief financial officer of the parent company. So my remarks will cover the consolidated parent company result. All the comparisons that I'm making are to the prior year quarter as I go through this. Okay, so during the first quarter of fiscal 24, we realized the benefits of the Q1 and Q4 fiscal 23 restructurings and other cost controls. The result was positive EBITDA of $1.3 million compared to an EBITDA loss of $2.2 million. This is the third consecutive quarter of increasing positive EBITDA, and we expect quarterly positive EBITDA for the remainder of fiscal 24. Moreover, as Dr. St. Arnold just mentioned, following the completion of the third fiscal quarter ending October 31st, 2023, the parent company anticipates that it will have achieved consolidated EBITDA profitable results for the entire previous 12-month period. Additionally, consolidated G&A expense decreased from $11 million to $8.5 million. The fiscal 23 restructurings focused on adjusting the level of back office G&A spend to accommodate expected revenue trends. And we also want to ensure the company's position to generate positive operating cash flow by the second half of fiscal 24. We eliminated approximately 85 non-student facing positions at Aspen University and AGI, resulting in ongoing quarterly savings of approximately $1.5 million. Additionally, we temporarily reduced internet advertising spend to maintenance levels. That's saving approximately $3.8 million a quarter. Recently, we resumed limited internet advertising, and we plan to ramp up to a forecasted spend of about $1 million per quarter by the end of fiscal 24. And this will allow us to build our student pipeline while also allowing us to achieve our cash flow objectives without borrowings or other third-party support. Regarding liquidity, so July 31, 2023, the consolidated company had unrestricted cash of $200,000 and restricted cash of $5.8 million. Restricted cash includes a $2 million reserve that's required by the closing of our May 23 accounts receivable facility of $12.4 million. The proceeds of this facility were reused to pay a $5 million line of credit that was coming due. We paid offering expenses, and then we provided working capital needed to transition to the HCM2 payment methodology. During Q1 fiscal 24, the transition to HCM2 did create variability in our unrestricted cash balance because the receipt of the first payment under HCM2 is generally delayed by the DOE because of extended review time. So to give you context, from February to July of 23, we received only one payment under the HCM2 program of only $1 million. So as a result of that, the receivable from the DOE that used to be non-existent built up to a level of $5.6 million by the end of July. So that's where the working capital need came from, and that's where these AR borrowings went to finance. So in August of 23 and September of 23, we received second and third reimbursement payments under HCM2 of approximately $2.9 million and $1.9 million respectively. And this substantially increased our unrestricted cash balance. So as of September 28th, which is today, our unrestricted cash balance has increased to $1.9 million. Additionally, now that AU has received three payments under HCM2, the DOE review time has decreased to 45 days or less. We've got a process that's running and more predictable. There's shorter review times, and now we have an ability to submit for an HCM2 payment every 30 days. So that plus the ongoing cost control that we've got that I previously discussed is going to allow us to generate positive operating cash flow in the second half of 2024. For some other balance sheet information, we have a solid current ratio of 2.0. Student accounts receivable is our largest asset. Current AR is, this is consolidated, it's $21.8 million. Long-term student AR is $15.7 million. And as previously mentioned, the HCM2 receivable and other current assets is $5.6 million. So these are all high-quality assets, provide ongoing liquidity, substantial liquidity for ongoing operations. And just as a reminder, the parent company's consolidated composite scores were 1.8 and 1.5 for fiscal 21 and 22, respectively. And as everybody knows, these scores are deemed to be financially responsible under the standards established by the DOE under Section 498C1 of the HEA.
Right. So you went from 1.8 to 1.5 and now 2.9 is what you said earlier. Right. Okay. All right.
And just one last thing I'd like to mention, you all can find more information that'll be available tomorrow. We're going to file our Q1 24 earnings release. That'll cover, obviously, the Q1 financial results. And we're also going to file our audited financial statements for fiscal 2023. And these will be on the OTC website just for your reference. Okay. So those are opportunities.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. And then with respect to the September letter from DEAC, I know that you have a response coming up October 4th, and it seemed like everything was finance related. And so I think you probably just rehearsed the outline for your response to DEAC. Is that fair enough?
Yes, and the questions and the responses, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the comprehensive update. Questions from Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, Mr. Levin, or Ms. Rome?
I don't have any.
No question from me.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain?
Yeah, just one question. In terms of Aspen Group, are there any issues or challenges with staying current on payments and obligations that you have to other states? I'm just throwing it out there. I just want to make sure that we understand that in terms of obligations that you have, payments, I heard from one particular regulator that stated a payment that was due to them for another institution that is under the umbrella of AIG bounced. So, and that's hearsay. But it did come from a regulator.
What I would say is that we transferred banks from back east to Arizona, and there was an issue with one account that had that, but that is not what's happening in practice, no.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Well, thank you very much for the update, and we wish you the best for the DEAC, and we'll see you.
Thank you. We're working hard. Thank you, Dr. Mittman.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We have Arizona Christian University.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Tito. You want to give us an opening statement?
Sure. My name is James Tito. I'm the Chief Operating Officer. And we also have Michael Werner, our VP of Finance, on, but I don't see his face anywhere here. I also would like to mention that President Munsell, who is usually on this call, sends his apologies for not being here. He's at a conference in Washington, D.C. that he had to attend. So I'd like to say that, thank you for having us on and the opportunity to explain to you, where we're at right now and where we're going. For this coming fiscal year, we put forth a budget to our board of trustees that was a balanced budget, and it was based on 940 full-time equivalent undergraduate students with 550 students living at the campus. We actually exceeded our fall enrollment numbers, and we're really excited about that. Our fall enrollment came out to 1,002 full-time equivalent, so we're way over on the income side than we were preparing for our budget. Compared to last year, we had 886 full-time enrolled students. Our total students for this fall came out to 1,230 students. Versus 1,082 last year. So that includes online and concurrent students. So we're way ahead in terms of enrollment. We're way ahead in terms of income, and we're happy about that. The HLC has approved two master's degrees, which is the Master of Education.
Mr. Tito, can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, just to jump in here. So you've exceeded your enrollment, so congratulations. That's always heartening to hear. And so what are you projecting from a net tuition standpoint?
Our net tuition is going to be about $2 million more than it was last year. And so, Mike, you have that exact number in front of you, correct?
So about $22 million.
Yeah, and that's not including online and the master's programs. So we should be about $24 million for total net tuition. So we're about $2 million over last year when it comes to just undergraduate.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm sticking specifically to the finances. And you lost. It looked like you were projected to lose about $5 million last year, right? And so are there other either revenue sources that you're anticipating, or are you going to make end the year with a balanced budget or end the year in the black?
Yeah, we anticipate that this year we'll be ending the year in the black. We also just completed a feasibility study over the last 5 months, which indicated that we have support to raise about $25 million in from donors that we're beginning, that President Munsell is beginning right now to work on that program.
Okay. And I assume that'll be like a comprehensive campaign?
Yeah, the campaign, it's over a 3-year period of time.
Okay.
So this year we are anticipating 9 million of the 25 million to come in. Our budget has 4.2 million built into it for donor support. So we're actually anticipating $5 million over what we're budgeting. So with the 4.2 million in donor support, and with the 940 students, we were at a balanced budget. So with the increase in enrollment and with the increase in donor revenue, we're going to be in the black.
Okay. And where your fiscal year ended
June
30th. And so I assume you're in like mid audit at this point, or?
Yeah, our audit is scheduled to be complete November 30th.
Okay, so we can have that for the December meeting. And yes. Kind of like you were just at about
a minute there.
I'm sorry?
You froze on me. I didn't hear what you said.
Okay. Yeah. You didn't miss anything because I was like semi stuttering. Your previous composite score was pretty close to 1.5. And I think you had some bank covenants that you have to meet on an annual basis. Can you tell the committee where you expect those to land given the previous fiscal year's financial performance?
Yeah, for June 30th, 2023, our days cash on hand covenant is we're meeting that. We actually had about $3.5, $3.6 million in cash in the bank as of June 30th. So that put us in a position to meet that covenant. The DSCR score we're behind on, and we're in the process right now of working with our investment banker, and we're getting a waiver on that. Moving into this fiscal year, our projections show that we're going to beat our DSCR and our days cash on hand by a large margin.
And are those the only, you only have two bank covenants for your for your debt?
Yeah, for the bond. Debt service coverage ratio, the DSCR, and the days cash on hand, that's it. And we're also working on right now, we have that $8.8 million high interest loan, and we're in the process of getting that refinanced through our current bond investors. So we hope to have that done by the end of the fiscal year.
And that was, I can't remember, I think it was around 12%. It was very high.
Yeah, 12%.
Okay. And your debt service coverage ratio, is that has a 12-month hailing component to it, right?
Yeah. Well, it renews at the beginning of every fiscal year.
Okay. And so you only report annually. You don't report quarterly on that.
Right. Correct.
Yeah, that's nice. And then from a composite score standpoint?
From a composite score, as of the June 30th, I think we're going to be at somewhere around 1. And for fiscal year 24, we're going to be well past the 1.15 that we need to be at.
The 1.5? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like, that's you can worry about that a year from now. But yeah. How are you going to address the Department of Ed's, or I don't know, what do you anticipate from the Department of Ed? Because you're sort of like, you're just at the bottom of the zone, which, you know, starts at 1.0 to 1.5.
Yeah, I, you know, from the Department of Ed's point of view, we will explain to them where we're at right now in terms of, you know, record enrollment. We're doing really well as a university. We have over $3 million.
I hate to say it. And I know that you've been there before. I don't think the Department of Ed is going to, I guess my question is, how do you plan to adapt to either being on HCM1 or do you think that that's not going to be a requirement, given that you're going to be very close to the bottom of the zone? So you know, significantly below 1.5, but close to 1.0 for that matter.
Yeah, we're not anticipating that we're going to have very punitive situation there because of the position that we're in, you know, for cash from where we are in terms of enrollment. And so that's kind of what we're thinking right now.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain?
It's trailing. In terms of when you're looking at your composite score and where you think it's going to fully land. So what you're telling us right now is you believe it's going to be at a 1?
Yeah, for the 2023 fiscal year audit. Michael, have you dug into that any further?
No, right now the initial conversation with our auditors is going on because I know the calculations that they have done for us previously have been more complex than what I'm used to. I can't tell you definitively where we're going to land, but the conversation with our auditor is happening now.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, just as a reminder, the Department of Ed, they're typically not very flexible. So just, you know, as you move this forward and you go to that direction, you'll hear back from them. But I also want to put in if it were to fall below that, that jeopardizes your participation in CERA as well. So it would jeopardize your ability to have your online programs that are covered currently through CERA. So I just want to make sure that you understand that that is the potential as well, outside of just the Department of Ed.
And I believe, Mr. LaMountain, that it's CERA's level is 1.5.
Right.
Not 1.0. So if you're between 1 and 1.5, you know, I would start having a conversation with the executive director, Lana Dueck, just so that you can make whatever alternative plans if that should come to pass. Okay. Other questions from board members? And I apologize for kind of moving us along. We have a very tight schedule today.
I don't have any questions.
No questions here.
Okay. Well, congratulations on strong enrollment. Wish you the best with good outcome for the audit, and we'll see you in December.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next up, AAI.
Hey guys, good morning.
Good. Hey guy.
I'm actually coming to you this time from Arizona. So excited to be here and introduce myself, Daylon Childress, VP of Operations, Joe Feiler, CFO, as well as Kayla Danier representing our compliance department today. Wanted to open up the call with just an opening statement related to a month that we're just about to finish. September is an exciting month for AAI, our campus, and our company. The campus just completed a term change that started 83 students, making this the largest class start of the year for AAI, and pushed our population over 402, 90 students ahead of our budgeted projections for FY23. The demand for these programs produced over 110 enrollments for this cycle, and that demand was completed with just some details that just showed some health of that performance. A 70% show rate and 26% of those starts coming from a referral channel. So just emphasizing just an overall best start of the year and just a solid departmental performance. In addition to some year-to-date starts that are similar to the one that just outlined, the AAI campus has maintained an average of less than 3% gross drop rates with a 400 student population, which is just equally as impressive as the start performance. Additionally, I'd like to announce and just share with the group, we received all the approvals for the launch of our CDL training program with a start date expected November 13th. And we're excited to add this program to the portfolio as we just continue to look for opportunities to grow revenue here and some revenue diversification provided to the campus and then our parent company. As it relates to financial performances, AAI produced $830K of positive EBITDA in the month of August. And if you look at a first half versus second half projection, AAI will outperform the first half with $1.2 million of EBITDA in the second half versus the $500 that they produced in the first half. An overall projection for our AI campus of $1.7 million in FY23, outperforming our 22 EBITDA performance and in line with our pre-2019 EBITDA performances for this campus. Our trajectory for both financial and population is positive and we are just very optimistic about this business moving forward for the balance of 23. As well as just go forward outlooks. As it relates to Ancora, overall continuing ops produced $979K of EBITDA in August, flat to plan, and $124K ahead of budgeted EBITDA year to date. Our core business turnaround continues with $2.9 million in contribution in August, beating the budget by $660K. And year-to-date contribution for our ground business is $3.2 million favorable to budget and a year-over-year projection of $14 million versus $7.7 in prior year. I know in previous calls, I positioned our company to produce a positive EBITDA in 23. I'm excited to share that we're projecting to deliver on that and have produced positive net income for the fourth consecutive month with our August financials. We anticipate that performance to continue through the balance of FY23 and end the year with positive EBITDA.
Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sounds like a good year for you guys.
Yes, sir, it is.
Questions? Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, Mr. Lamountain, Ms. Rome.
I don't have any.
Friends and guests.
No questions here.
Yeah.
No questions. Thank
you. Well, thank you for a very comprehensive set of documents and wish you continued success. I know that the pandemic was particularly hard, especially given the nature of the programs that you offer, and it sounds like you guys are really on the upswing. So good work.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
Have a great one.
Yep. The school formerly known as Wizard.
Good morning, everybody. How are you doing today?
Yeah, we're good.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the time. I'll keep my segment brief and answer any questions that everybody has. But this year has continued to improve for us and get us back on track. Our enrollments are up. Kind of seems like a common theme for a lot of the schools on this call, which is always nice to hear. Most notably is our partnership with AMR Ambulance has continued to improve, and we're launching new classes up with their operations unit in Prescott, which is a little bit of a dry area for program options for EMTs looking to expand to paramedic up there. And then we just received word as well from the AMR location out in Havasu that they are looking at putting another class together. Again, another kind of underserved area for training opportunities. So those have been the most notable for us. We're slated for another 100% full class starting here at the end of October. And so everything is trending really nicely for us as the year has continued. The other big news that we have on our side is we have been consolidating our country club campus location in Mesa into our Dobson campus location, which is obviously going to cut out some overhead, cut out some redundancies of staffing there. In the last handful of months, we've expanded with about another 3,000 and change square feet to our Dobson location so that we can kind of facilitate the integration of those two campuses. Ultimately, they're about 4 miles away from each other. So it's an easy one for us to merge together on that side of it. So
I used to go to your country club campus.
That's right. We'll still have a little space there for some of the CPR and the ACLS continuing.
That's education. Okay. I'm retired, so my ACLS are over.
But yeah, all of our vocational programs will consolidate into the big campus that we have on Main Street in Dobson, just down the road.
Well, congratulations on that, and also on the expansion, the relationships, and the financial performance. Questions, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, Ms. Rome, Mr. LaMountain.
I have no questions.
I have none.
No questions here.
All right, last chance, Mr. LaMountain.
No, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. We appreciate the completeness of your materials, and also are very happy that LifeWork is going in the right direction. That's great.
Great. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, Doug. And let's see. I think this is going to be, you guys are like this is the showstopper here. Guillermo Lopez, it's all on you.
Right now, yes. Daniela is on the call, but she is also, she's kind of like in two meetings at the same time. But I think I can answer most of the questions that you may have. But if you need something from her, she's available.
Okay. Is there anything that you'd like to share in advance?
Well, yes, we actually have quite a few different things that are looking a little bit better for us. One of the things is we were granted a grant back in June. Towards the end of the month, and put us in a positive for this year. And even with the enrollment as it goes, we should be finishing hopefully in the black as for the year, at least, as we go. We tried to tighten some of the things that we had before as far as expenses goes. But the other thing that we have is also we are in the second phase of being approved for a grant to teach 200 students. So that would be quite a bump for our enrollment. Now this is most likely going to be taken in 60 days or so from now. So our 200 students that we'll be teaching will be mainly for the 2024 year, but that is still a very promising scenario, because we already been approved for the first, and we just finished the second phase as far as all the documents and some of that we needed to send over. As far as enrollment goes, we have been so far pretty much the same almost as the rest of the year, although we have noticed that some of different marketing approaches that we have taken are kind of seems like they're being fruitful. Instead of just relying pretty much on social media and stuff like that, we actually have taken an approach of going back to going physically to places, providing different little services, and being part of different events are happening, and actually creating some events of our own as far as teaching CPR to the community and everything else, just getting our name outside over there, which seems like we have little by little been increasing our numbers. We also have a new MOU with GCU. So our students are actually going to be getting, which hopefully that will result in more students as far as getting a scholarship through GCU if they attend our schools. And there's also a program that we are hoping to finish soon, which is teaching CNA to the nursing students or future nursing students from GCU, which hopefully that will also be resulting in an increased amount of numbers. And this is coming up hopefully by the end of the year. For phlebotomy, we have made a or started actually a program for Headlands, which is a research lab that essentially tried to see if medicines and so forth are what do you call it?
Clinical trial?
Huh?
Clinical trials?
It's for clinical trials. Yes, thank you. And they're actually wanting to us to train phlebotomists, but then give them the specific type of training that will be required for their facility. That doesn't look like a great amount of numbers, but it is still about 20 students that we might be training for them, which is, you know, everything adds up.
Great.
We also started working with being able to get for the GI Bill. We previously have never really tried to do that. I don't know why, but we are actually trying to see if we can qualify for the GI Bill. So I tried to start the process for that. So any veterans and so forth can come through the program and not just relying solely on funding from WIOA type of programs for grants. As far as the cash students, because we have had, and this is something that we're also trying to clear up from the balance sheets that we notice. We're trying to work with somebody that's called Mia Share. And one of the things that they would do is they would ensure the payments of the students that are coming to our program, and then the students will, you know, make payments to their facility in order to, you know, the payment arrangements and so forth that they have. We normally average between 40 to sometimes even 80 grand a year of, nowadays we call it bad debt, but, you know, essentially people that didn't pay us. We never really pursued to collect money from students that couldn't pay. And this is one of the reasons why our balance sheets have such a high number. So I think it's close to $500,000 worth of unreceived, which we're going to essentially just forgive the debt for the students that have been in the previous years. So that should be coming down to zero.
You look like you're on track from your income statement, and your balance sheet looks good. Your current ratio is strong. You've got cash. It sounds like you've got some nice things in the pipeline. So congratulations on that. Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, Ms. Rome, Mr. LaMountain, any questions?
So let me ask you this. You have $1 million in receivables?
$500,000.
And a lot of it's bad or uncollectible?
Yes. So a lot of the... we have never really tried to pursue the students that don't stop paying us to make the payments. But yes, that is the amount of money that as of now students from, I think since we started the school, have not paid us.
So if you write that off, what does that do to your P&L?
That I would not be able to answer.
It becomes a bad debt, right? Which is an expense.
Yes, I would assume so.
Correct, it is.
And so, that would make your loss even larger. So you got to watch that, yeah. Okay, I don't have any other question.
Okay. And it might be good, to talk. Ms. Bulmini, if you're the finance person, to get with your, if you work with an accounting firm, or if you have other advice on how to write that off, is it all in one fell swoop, or is it something that you do over time? But I'll leave that for you.
It is going to be done over time. So we are actually starting with the last, the years are like about 7-8 years ago. And we're probably going to stop right about 2 years, and see if we can, one, get those students to re-enroll and finish paying that stuff off. We kind of deem anything that is over 3 years to be very difficult to collect. So we're going to go year by year to see if, so it's not going to be, everything being gone in one day.
No. Okay.
Right. Yeah, that was the suggestion from the CPA.
Okay. Mr. Wallace, any other questions?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, good. All right. Well, best wishes for the grant and for the arrangement with GCU and the other good things. Good luck with the bad debt. And we'll see you in 3 months.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It was nice to see everybody. And with that, I will make a motion to adjourn, which means we are adjourned.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Mittman.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.